much. I was down in, Sue and I were down in Big Bend where it was 86 degrees a few days ago. And so I text my so-called friend Rob and said, do you want to teach, this was week before last, this week's lesson, and or do you want to teach the next week's lesson, which was today's lesson? And he texted back and said, I'll teach last week's lesson. So when I finally got around to looking at the lesson this week, I thought, you got to be kidding me. Honesty in tithing. What a topic. And so I thought, well, I wonder if I can fake a sickness and call Roger, and then I'll teach next week. Then I flipped over the quarterly to next week, and next week is on tithing. Oh. So I decided might as well just bite the bullet and take this one. So always following the quarterly, because that's what I do the best, let's start in with honesty and tithing. So who would like to, how long shall we discuss what honesty means? Yes?
Well, do you think that I did that on purpose?
Well, absolutely.
Honesty.
Yeah. I thought, why am I so nice? I knew as soon as I looked at it. All right, so what do you want to say about honesty? Okay, how many are for honesty? How many are against honesty? Well, okay, that takes care of that word. So let's go to the next one, which is tithing. So, I've got a question to ask you, because I like to ask questions. I want you to think on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being absolute, 1 being no way. How important is tithing? I don't want an answer. I just want you to think. How important is tithing on a scale of 1 to 10? Okay, so do you kind of have your answer in your mind? All right. So let's look at how important tithing is. Number one, was tithing in heaven before the fall? Well, I got one no. Was tithing in heaven before the fall? Anybody? I got one no. I got two no's.
When we understand the principle of tithing,
I didn't want to hear from you. You had a chance to take 45 minutes, and you declined. Now, do you think that you can speak up within 2 minutes of this lesson and have input?
I just want to make it tougher for you.
Yeah, you made it tough when you picked last week's lesson. It's tithing in heaven.
Guess you have to get a definition of tithing.
Well, I just want to know if it was in heaven. Was tithing introduced in the Garden of Eden before the fall? Will we be tithing in heaven in the new earth? Remember, my question is, how important is tithing? If we're what?
If we have a selfish nature, so I don't think it's in heaven or in the earth.
Okay. All right. So, do you think tithing was in heaven? And do you think tithing will be in the new earth? Is Roger the only one that's willing to... Oh, no, Reva said no. Anybody else?
I say no.
Pardon?
I say no.
You say no. Okay, well, there's three no's. Yes?
I think in heaven they were giving it all, so it wasn't like 10%. They were just giving it all.
Okay, all right. Okay. let's see. Roger and Carol, did you help put your two daughters through school? Both of them?
Define help.
Did you give them money to get them into school, help them?
To get in?
To go through school.
Eventually.
Okay. Now, do you require them to pay 10% of their income for the rest of their life to you all out of gratefulness?
No.
No?
No.
Roger?
No.
No. Well, then why does God do that to us? I mean, you love your kids, don't you? And you help them. And you want them to love you. Am I correct? So, why don't you remind them how good you are by having them give you 10% of their income for the rest of their life to show their gratefulness?
I'm not sure it's 10%, but they do give us things.
They give you what?
Well, they do. They are, now that they both have jobs, they do buy us things out of just gratefulness.
Well, I mean, I bring some offerings to church every once in a while out of gratefulness.
The one has told me she's already picked up my nursing home.
Well, well, I see that's good, but you know, how come we don't require our kids to give us back after everything we've done for them, all the sacrifices we've made? How come we don't require our kids to give us 10% back, just to show them that they really appreciate what we've done? So how important is tithing? Can you be, let's see, maybe times have changed. Can you be on the church board? I think times have changed. Can you be on the church board if you don't pay tithe? Did you all know that? That you're not supposed to be on the church board if you don't pay tithe? Now, I think that's changed somewhat, but it used to be, I remember, am I correct?
Absolutely.
That you used to, when you nominated Ron Combs to be head elder, one of the first things you had to do was check to see if he paid tithe. Correct?
That's why I got kicked out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why Roger and Carol's kids are slackers. They just pay every once in a while. So how important is tithe paying? And why are we spending 23 lessons this quarter on tithing? So how important on a scale of 1 to 10? Who has it above a 5? Raise your hand. Remember, the lesson's on honesty. Who has tithe paying above a 5 is important? 3 people. Did you have your hand up?
Yes.
4 people.
I think how else would ministers be paid?
Pardon me?
I think it's important because how else would ministers be paid?
Okay. All right. Well, that's what Roger and Carol are saying to their kids. Yeah. Let's see. So tithing wasn't in heaven, which it wasn't. And tithing won't be in the new earth, which it won't. And tithing wasn't in the Garden of Eden, which it wasn't. So when was the principle of tithing introduced in its full concept? Pardon me?
After the sin.
I can't hear.
After the sin.
After sin, absolutely. All right, but when what specific instances was tithing really put forward? Anybody know? How about when the children of Israel were getting ready to go into the land of Canaan? The land of milk and honey. Now, we think that there was a little bit of some time. We have Melchizedek and some of that stuff that I don't want to get into. But the tithing principle really became forefront when the children of Israel went into Canaan. Now, why was it important then if God introduced the principle of tithing to the children of Israel at that point? Why? Did He want them to demonstrate how much they loved Him by paying tithe? Do we demonstrate how much we love God by paying tithe? So why would He institute that principle for them to do that at that time?
Because there was going to be plenty and to keep them from being selfish and greedy.
Okay. So is tithing for God's benefit?
Nope.
Or is it for our benefit? And if it's for our benefit, how does that come about? Why? Explain to me. You have people that say, well, I just, in fact, the quarterly wants me as a teacher to ask this question. So obviously I rebel against the quarterly for asking the question, but I was going to ask it anyway. So what do you say to the person who says, I cannot afford to pay tithe? So what's the answer to that? What do you say to a person who says, I just can't afford to pay tithe?
Ernie, we can afford to do anything we want to do. If you don't want to pay the tithe, we can afford to do that.
That's what we tell our kids.
But there will be a consequence.
Okay. Now I'm getting a little clearer picture now. What would that consequence be?
I don't know, but I question it.
But there's going to be one.
There will be one.
Okay. So.
It would probably be different for everybody.
All right. So, what's our motivation? Our motivation is to stay away from the consequence. Pardon?
I laugh at that thought.
Oh, you laugh at that thought. Okay. So, to stay away from the consequence is not the motivation. Okay, well.
That's fear.
That's fear. Okay. So, what is the motivation?
It's acknowledging that all good things come from God.
Okay. And why does God want to do that? Because Roger and Carol don't do that with their kids. Even though one of them bore them for 9 months and the other one put up with the lady for 9 months and they had a nice baby, but they don't require 10%. And since they don't pay you 10%, do you have consequences for them?
Severe.
Yeah. You see? You see? Do we put God in that same little cubicle like that? Well, I've got to pay the 10% because I got to pay it. So what's our motivation for paying it? God gives us everything. Well, that's a true statement, but that's a nice statement. But what does that mean? So why did God come along to the children of Israel and say to them, I would like for you to give me 10% of whatever you make? Was it to pay the priests? Was that the main motivation? Why didn't he just say, why don't you just pay the priests?
Because
Or why didn't he set up a thing? This was something I discovered about a year ago that blew my mind. Do you know that every person that's in the leadership of the Mormon Church, from the president of the Mormon Church on down, does not get paid? That's amazing. They don't have paid janitors. They don't have paid music people. They don't have paid preachers. They don't have paid Sabbath school. Oh, well, you don't have paid Sabbath school teachers either. Well, that part doesn't work. They don't get paid. So for them to pay tithe, to pay their preachers, that doesn't work. Because nobody will get paid. Nobody will get paid. So here you have the children of Israel. They're going into the promised land. God emphasizes unto them that he wants a tenth. Why? Was it a test? Does God want us to pay tithe to test us? And by the way, when the tithe is down, what do we instruct our preachers to do? Sermon on stewardship and tithing.
Is that why we're studying it, maybe?
I think the General Conference is in trouble. Seriously, I was chairman of the Finance Committee 3 or 4 years ago, and where tithing was down, and so the Finance Committee, not me, but the Finance Committee, voted to have a series of sermons from the preacher on stewardship. So, everybody in the Arlington Church pays tithe. Good or bad? Good or bad? Yes?
Joey Behar, who's on The View, made a comment last week, I don't know if any of you have heard it, about Vice President Pence, you know, being mentally ill because Jesus talked to him. And in her defense, when people got a little upset about that, she said, well, I'm a Christian and I give money to the church. And that's what she thought, being a Christian.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So, everybody in the Arlington Church is a tithe payer, honest 10%. Have we accomplished anything?
No.
How important is that? What's the answer? How important is it? Or does it make any difference? Yes?
I think it's interesting, the lesson that you explained, you know, as you stated. So we talk about tithing, so we equate that to honesty, not equating it in this quarterly to the benefits, to your own personal benefits, of what you're doing for people around you. You may be paying your tithe to the local Meals on Wheels or YMCA or something. You're doing something for the community out of love that is just a natural outpouring. It should not be a requirement. It should not be connected to honesty in your membership to the church. And I think that's the problem that we have been indoctrinated with in our church and probably much of Christianity. We've tied, that's a tongue tire, we have connected tithing, I think erroneously, to honesty and to good membership, to good standing, and we've completely lost in all of the discussion and in all of the indoctrination, we've lost the real benefit that God wanted us to enjoy by doing something for others. I can equate giving, philanthropy, charity, whatever you you want to call it, tithing. And unfortunately, I think tithing in our church has kind of taken on a negativity. And that's why we opened the discussion this morning with that, you know. And for good reason. Well, I think of tithing sort of like the Sabbath, in a way. God, when the time came, he did creation, and through history, he tried to emphasize the fact that 6 days, but this is what makes sense to me, and I think it will make sense to you. I'm going to ask you, I'm going to suggest to you that you dedicate a block of time that we spend together, and you'll see the benefit. And I think charity, same thing. God is trying to teach us that it's going to make sense to you if you appreciate a block of your resources, your time, your interest. If you turn around and do something for others, just that little small block of time, it's not 90%, even a 10%, you're going to appreciate life much better.
Okay. All right. Appreciate that. Did God give to the children of Israel the sacrificial animal system?
Yes.
Before the fall or after the fall? Oh, after. Oh, okay. Was that important for the children of Israel to do the sacrificial system every morning?
Yes.
David, was that important?
Yes.
Okay. Then how come in the Old Testament God says, paraphrasing, you idiots. I don't want the sacrificial system. I don't want your animals that you sacrifice. What did he say he wanted? I want your heart. But yet you told me that the sacrificial system was absolutely important. And God came along and said, you missed the whole thing. I don't really want that, the blood of animals. I want your heart. And that's exactly what God says about tithing. I don't want your tithe. I want your heart. Now, when the children of Israel went into Canaan, the land of everything, they literally went from poverty to manna and water and blessings in the desert to a land of milk and honey. What is always, people that win the lottery and get millions of dollars, people in poverty that are given a brand new home, generally what happens? Pardon? What happens, generally?
Within a year or two, they're back.
They're right back to where they were. There was a project I remember a long time ago, it had to be a long time ago because I lived in San Antonio, that they put people in a brand new house with gold faucets and plumbing and all of that. Within 3 years, they had torn out the plumbing, the faucets, had sold them, and the houses become just a wreck. And God said to the children of Israel, I know what's going to happen. You're going to go into this land, and you're going to be blessed with everything. And what's the tendency to happen when you have all of a sudden riches or sudden blessings like that? What's the tendency?
Forgot where they came from.
That's exactly right. Man, look what I have accomplished. And God come along and said, you're my children. I don't want you to become self-centered. All I want is for you to remember it was our relationship that brought you to this point. And I know what the tendency is going to be. You're going to become self-absorbent. You're going to become self-succeeding. And you're going to wander away And so I want you to, self-seceding, is that a word?
No.
Well, it ought to be.
Sufficient.
It ought to be a word. So I know what's going to happen. And so I've got to help you keep a perspective. And so when everything comes flowing in, for your benefit, I just want you to bring a tenth of that so that you'll be reminded that it's our relationship that has brought you this far. I don't want your money. I don't need your money. We'll figure out how to pay the priests. They had a volunteer offering one time in the wilderness, right? And what did Moses have to do? Tell them to quit, stop, brought too much. I tried that in Oklahoma when I was pastoring and they stopped. And it didn't have enough, so I said, well, Moses must have known something I didn't know. You see? Stop, I don't need any more. And God said, I love you, I care for you, I don't want you to wander off the path. So just bring a tenth to me. And keep in focus our relationship. But remember this, I don't need your money. Jesus says, I don't need you all to witness. Why do you think that Jesus lets us witness? Why do you say that Jesus says to us, why don't you take the message to the world? He says, I don't need you. I got rocks that can cry out. He doesn't want our money. He wants our hearts. So, what's the answer to stewardship? Well, guess what? Preach Jesus Christ and the cross. You want the tithe to go up? Preach Jesus Christ and the cross. You want the church to become active? Preach Jesus Christ and the cross. You want to have a good lesson for the quarter? Get off of stewardship. Please. You see, he doesn't want our money. Just like Roger and Carol, they don't want their kids' money. They want their hearts. They want their grandchildren. And that's what God wants from us. He wants our heart. But he knows what it's like when you start. Morning. How are you doing? He knows what it's like when we start becoming successful, when we start making money, when we start moving up the corporate ladder. How do I know? Because I know what happened to me. And all of a sudden you're busy doing this, and church doesn't quite become important. He knows that. So he just says, I'm going to give you a bunch of things that I hope remind me. The Sabbath is one of them. Now, I could really start a good argument. I don't like that, so I won't. Will there be Sabbath in heaven? Well, now the quick answer is going to be yes, because from one new moon, one Sabbath. Why? I mean, first of all, is time going to be a 7-day period? But that starts out a whole new deal, so I won't go there. Unless I teach next week, and that will be the lesson. So if Roger and Rob flake out on me next week. But you see, he says, I'm going to give you the Sabbath. Not for me. I don't need the Sabbath. You need it. You need tithe paying to keep that perspective. But let me tell you, hello, Hey!
Sorry, we're so late.
Oh, now, there's very few people that can interrupt my class, but this is one of them that can. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well.
Well, you're looking good.
Thank you.
Thank you for bringing him. So, God doesn't want our tithe. Doesn't need our tithe. But He knows that we need to recognize where our source comes from. The Sabbath, not something we've got to keep. I've tried that, and that becomes the worst day in the week. Is something that we need for renewal. Tithing, help us keep in perspective. So if you want to increase the church tithing, don't preach on stewardship. Preach on Christ. You want people to become better Sabbath keepers? Don't preach on what you got to do and who's out to kill us if we don't do it. Preach Christ. And then the rest of it will start to fall into place. Now I want to move over a little bit. The quarterly picked honesty. And honesty, you can't have honesty unless you have faith. And so of all the people in the Bible that they wanted to pick to have faith was Abraham. Now this is where Rob could teach the class, but no, he chose not to. So therefore, I take credit for everything from here to 11:15 as being my own original fantastic idea. And Rob had absolutely no input into it. Do you all get the picture? Okay. Why would you pick Abraham as a man of faith?
Because he left his home country and followed God to the new country.
All right. Well, that's fantastic. So, and then when he got to the new country, everything he did was perfect, right? Dr. Moore.
Abraham was just as much the father of works as he is the father of faith.
Okay.
Abraham.
Well, you just took the next 14 minutes, summarized it in 30 seconds.
There you go.
Which I appreciate. Now let's move on to the next word in the quarterly, which is and. Yeah, was Abraham, he was man of faith. He left the Ur, he came over to the land. So was he perfect?
No.
Name the things that he did that were not good.
Sarah was his sister.
Pardon?
Sarah was his sister.
How many times?
Two.
Once, we can understand. Right? You know, you make a mistake. How about the second time? No. But yet, the quarterly picked of anybody in the Bible as a man of faith, Abraham. So right now, Abraham goes down to Egypt, then he has the king, and he's my sister, and blah, blah, blah. And he gets admonished. He gets tattled on both times by God not to do that. All right, what else did he do?
He took Hagar.
Took Hagar. Man, that would take him right off the church board immediately. What else did he do? That's three. What else did he do? God comes to him and says, Abraham, you're going to be the father of many multitudes. You're going to have a son. And Abraham immediately says, oh, I believe in you, God. However, you need my help. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to have my servant take care of this problem and help us out. This was right after God said, you, Abraham, are going to have a child. So that's number four. What else did he do that was wrong? He laughed at God about having a child. And yet, the Bible picks him as a man of faith. So, he left Ur. That took some faith. God come along and said, okay. And then what's the next big thing that he did in the way of faith? What's the big one that we ascribe to him? Right. He took Isaac to sacrifice and to kill, and he never questioned God.
Amen.
Now, what would we do to a person that stood up and said that to us today? God has commanded me to go kill my son, and I'm on my way to kill him. What would we do with that person?
Lock him up.
Pardon?
Lock him up.
Yeah.
Put him in a mental
institution. Yeah. And yet we say, well, wow. Boy, this Abraham, he's a good guy. God's come along and says, Abraham, why don't you kill your kid? Okay. Wow. There's got to be more to that story. Because that doesn't make sense. Certainly he didn't tell anybody. Anybody in the right mind would have hit him with a club. Now, I came up with this statement. He didn't tell Sarah because Sarah would have said, yeah, somebody's got to die and it ain't going to be Isaac. Now, I had a vision on that one time, and that's where I came up with that statement. Certainly has nothing from Rob. You know, I used to sell Bible books, worked my way through college selling Bible books for five of my 9 years of college. And I used to point to that picture, beautiful picture in the volume one of Abraham there and Isaac on the altar and the knife up in the air. And I used to say, isn't it wonderful how Abraham trusted God that he was willing to kill his own son? Man, I wish I had that story back. Because, you see, that ain't the story. And we have three insights that we want to look at. Okay, first of all, somebody find Genesis 22, verse 6, I think it is. Whoever gets there first. Well, Abraham is walking along with Isaac and the men and the donkeys and the fire and the wood. And they go for 3 days. Abraham doesn't say anything. He's, okay, hold on just a second. He's thinking. Now, if you were in Abraham's case, would you be talking about what you think the Dallas Cowboys are going to do or not do? No. You would be talking and thinking about to who? To God. And Abraham's thinking and he's praying. And he gets to the mountain where God says, Abraham, this is it. And so Abraham turns to his men and read 15 verse 6, I mean 22 verse 6.
So Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son, and took the fire in his hand and a knife, and the two of them went together.
All right, go back to verse 5.
Okay. Abraham said to his young men,
yeah,
stay here with the donkey, that lad and I will go yonder and worship. We will come back to you.
Wow. You see, we leave that one out in the story. That's the most, in Genesis, that's the most important verse in the whole story. He says, stay here. The lad and I will go up to the mountain to sacrifices. And what?
We will come back to you.
We will come back. There's where the faith is. There's where the trust of God is.
Abraham saw Isaac as resurrection.
Yes. That goes to Hebrews 11, where it says that in that 3 days, paraphrasing, great paraphraser, in that 3 days as he figured this all out and he wrestled with it, he kept saying, God, you said my son is heir and everyone will be born through him. Now you tell me to sacrifice him. And in Hebrews 11 it says that Abraham came to the conclusion that if he sacrificed him, God would resurrect him and bring him back. You see, you cannot have faith, trust, in somebody that you do not know. You can hope, you can pray, you can just plead, you can give everything. You have no faith in somebody you do not know. And the concept that we are to trust God no matter what is baloney. Because God doesn't ask us to do that. And Abraham, of all the people the quarterly picks, because he went to offer his son, yes, he followed God, but he thought, he talked, he prayed, he got logical. He talked to God and he began to figure it out. Listen, God has said the seed will come through this boy. And even though I sacrifice him, if that's the case, God will resurrect him. But he said to the two men, the boy and I will be back. People go through troubles. They say, well, just trust God. Meaningless words. It's like after you hit your thumb with a hammer, you say, don't cry. Meaningless words. God says, get to know me. Let's walk down that path. Let's have that relationship. And what I've done for you in the past will be enough for you to trust me that I'll work it's the same for you in the future.
Amen.
And then Jesus comes and finishes it all out. And this is the beauty of the story, and we don't even mention it. He comes along and says, do you really want to know what happened with my good friend Abraham? He said, after there on the mount, I came and Abraham saw my day. And God said to Abraham, how did you feel, Abraham, when you're about to raise that knife and plunge it into your son? How did you feel? Oh God, he says, my heart was broken. Everything was shattered. I trusted you, but it was just horrific. And God says, Abraham, you're the only person in this entire universe that will understand because of what you were willing to do on that mountain when you see my son put on a cross and there will be no angel to spare him. And Abraham, I'll have that same feeling in my heart that you had. Abraham, who was a friend of God, who trusted God, who rationalized that God would perform, that God would bring his boy back to life, he's the only person in this universe that understands what it's like for a father to have a broken heart as their son is sacrificed. And God allowed Abraham to share that with him. That's that story. Not one that just sat along and said, Abraham, since you ain't got anything to do in the next day or so, why don't you go kill your son? Just to show everybody you trust me. Same principle with tithe paying. God doesn't come along and say, why don't you pay your tithe? Just to show everybody how much you trust me. God says, know me. Know me. And the rest will fall into place. And you'll be glad to return to your fellow man what me and you have accomplished walking together down that path. Father in heaven, I personally hope that none of us ever have an Abraham experience. But I do hope that we have the experience of walking down the path, and as we come along the obstacles and the hurdles of life, we know we can look back and see how you've done in the past with us, and how you've protected us and loved us and cared for us, and that we have all the proof in the world that no matter what the obstacles are, you will be there again in the future. And we know that we can count on you. So the old song says, it's no secret what God can do. What He done for others, He'll do for you. Mm-hmm. And so we know that the God of Abraham, who you allowed to see the inside of your heart, that God is our God, and that you will take care of your children. We think of Debbie and the sorrow that she's going through. We think of Norma and her family and the sorrow, but yet the joy that they're going through. And what it says to us, Father, is we all look forward to the resurrection day when there's no more sorrow, no more sadness, and we have eternity to sit and talk. Why did you give us tithe paying? In Jesus' name, amen.